everyone, back for the third session. I think Manjri is missing or the video is not on. Manjri, video on, please.
You can start, Amita.
Yeah. So everyone, welcome back. We've had two sessions. They've all gone way over time. So the third one, we're really looking forward to. What we're going to deal with is basically creating engagement through digital brand activation and the whole last mile or closing of the loop. The first speaker is Manjri Upadhyay. Manjri, till recently, was the CEO of Wellspun Home Textiles and is now in Amazon. Apart from being a keen observer of human behavior, Manjri loves experimenting in the kitchen and is learning to be an Odyssey dancer. Manjri, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Amrita. The new normal, you know, I'm sure a lot of speakers have spoken about the way we live and the way we look at our lives is going to change dramatically until such time that a permanent cure is definitely found for COVID. And, you know, in this new normal, while we see a lot of increase in digital engagement, and yes, because people are on their screens very often and all of those things, to us, you know, the big question is that how do you still keep the business chugging along while this is happening? And there is definitely a new normal when you talk about doing business in this new world. And I would really, you know, start customer or consumer backwards to first note down whichever category I manage or whichever business I am in, how's my customer going to change the way they look at the category? And if I have to just take a look at fashion category, you know, everyone knows that there's going to be increased work from home. Schools are going to be shut for some time. People are going to not venture out that much. So the whole demand only for casuals, stay-at-home, comfort clothing, loungewear, track pants, all of that is going to go up, and probably people are not going to even think of footwear for some time. I just happened to read a joke saying, you know, my footwear thought I'm dead. And it resonates. It does resonate. So you really have to work a customer backwards to see in the new normal. And the new normal is, in my mind, at least 6 to 8 months, it's going to be just this way. So what is it that the consumers are clearly, you know, changing their lifestyle around? And look at each and every category of yours. And snacking has gone up dramatically. Baking at home has, so there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, food companies to figure out these levers that could help build consumption patterns to these new occasions and new demands. Entertainment at home. So, you know, whatever is going on with Prime Video and Hotstar and everything that you see, that's going to stay for some time. So identify those demand signals and demand patterns. The question is, yes, you still can, you know, signal a lot to the consumer, but how do you fulfill it at the end of the day in this new normal? And I can tell you that the ground reality is different and is difficult. It's difficult because of the norms that are created, rightfully so. You know, we all need to be safe and we all need to take care of our employees, the whole staff in the warehouses, the front, the last mile people who deliver, etc. And social distancing will continue for some time. So all the hygiene practices, etc. But what is it? It means that it's significantly reduced capacity across all the last mile pillars. There is reduced capacity everywhere, which is, you know, not like it's a double, triple whammy kind of a situation. I can't operate my warehouse with full capacity. I can't operate my last mile. So how do I, you know, still manage to service to the demand that I definitely see a spike in, and yet maintain the whole cost angle of it? And that's critical because, you know, we've heard of cash crunches, we've heard of a lot of things, and we still need to get through this situation and manage our working capitals really well. And for that, you know, a couple of things other than, you know, tracking to your customer demand and picking up those signals. The one aspect that I would like to discuss here is, you know, this whole hyper-local thing. I think that's going to be the new norm in some time to come. How can I partner with my local shops, local retailers, to get the best of the demand fulfillment coming in? Because I run only with 50% or less than 50% capacity in my warehouse. I don't have enough delivery associates coming in, and that's the situation with everyone pretty much. People are scared, they're not turning up to work, or they have, you know, pretty much migrated out of this the main hubs. So overall shortfall of manpower and how do I address this and how can I partner with local retailers to get the demand service to consumers still while enabling. So e-commerce is going to play a huge role in still managing this. And you know, I feel that retailers who have had an early start with the tech-enabled omni-channel, they are definitely going to win this game. It's just not just e-commerce, but you know, some of the retailers that we know of, they have a complete tech-enabled omni-channel, and they are, I think, better prepared in this new normal to service the demand. That is an important aspect. The other aspect that I want to talk about is the whole B2B versus the B2C angle. A lot of B2B companies, they have demands. For example, somebody contacted us for a huge number of PPE equipments and masks for employees. How do we service that? That's another angle that's coming in. That who all can we partner with, can aggregate the stuff and still supply the B2B requirements? And there's going to be a lot of demand in that area as well. So think of it in terms of both B2C as well as B2B. And work customer backwards, and and those are the things from a last mile standpoint that I would say think hyper local in wake of reduced capacity and shoppability via digital, because you're getting consumers to engage with you quite a bit, but if you can get them to shop at the same time, that would be great. So Instagram already has that capability, but on your own site, if you can, for small ticket size items, maybe it does not make sense, but for large ticket size items, it definitely makes sense to have a shoppable digital engagement.
Thanks, Manjari. Are you done or are you frozen?
Yeah,
I think it's frozen.
Okay.
Oh, no, she's there. Okay, perfect.
Okay, thanks, Manjari. I'll get back to you with some questions, but I want to introduce our next speaker, Michael Green. Michael is the founder and managing partner of Action Group with over 20 years of hands-on international agency experience in consumer and trade marketing. He has deep involvement in Olympics and FIFA World Cup experiential and hospitality programs, long-standing relationships with clients such as Coke, Mondelez, Mars, and Heineken, and is proud to work with Omnicom and Dentsu Network. Michael, you're on.
And one of the funniest guys I know, despite being a Brit. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no pressure.
No pressure at all.
This is quite surreal. I haven't been to India for, I think, about 2 years. And I didn't imagine I would be back in this format, but it's a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. So I think just to give some augmented background to what Amrita said, I come from an experiential marketing and trade marketing background. So I'm always conscious of both the kind of the consumer marketing side, plus also the actual hard retail and distribution side. And I think that's part of what I want to focus on in the next few minutes. I'm from a background where I've done a lot of work in emerging markets where things change very quickly for good and for bad. I'm going to try and talk fairly globally, and I'm going to try and not talk about COVID and the current situation we're in, because I guess that's been covered, and I don't want to duplicate. So the first point I wanted to make is I think regardless of whether we're talking about digital or TV or physical activation, certain fundamentals don't change. When you're a brand, everything is about mind space and shelf space, or mental availability and physical availability. And Manjari talked about shoppability. It's pointless thinking about digital engagement unless you've actually got a means by which someone can go on and actually purchase. So I think digital offers a lot of opportunity in the traditionally, when you pumped out lots of TV media, the gap between watching the commercial and buying was pretty big. Whereas now we're in a brave new world. So for all the complication, there's actually a huge amount of opportunity to link messaging at a consumer level to actual purchase. So for me, it's that dual battle for mental and physical availability. And that's what should be prime in our minds whenever we're thinking about how do you activate digitally. Fundamentally, I'm a massive skeptic about differentiation. I very much buy into Byron Sharp's model of penetration is everything. That you've got to have mental and physical penetration with your brands. You've got to be available. You've got to stand out. You've got to be easy to buy. And we as marketers or as salespeople, we can sit down and we can try and cut people up into groups and segment them and target our brands at them. But fundamentally, that's not how people work. We're just one of thousands of choices people make every month. And being everywhere, being omnichannel, both in terms of communication, but also in terms of distribution, is absolutely essential. And we can tell ourselves that our consumers are loyal to us, our customers are loyal to us, but I generally think that's naive. If you haven't read Byron Sharp, you should go away and read him, because he simplifies our mission in that he's saying, don't overcomplicate what we're doing, where we may feel that we have this huge loyalty base, but in actual fact, our loyal customers represent a very small part of who buys from us. And we're very easy to substitute. So again, everything is about being big, gaining penetration, both there, but also in terms of distribution. And that means online, offline, omnichannel these days. And post-COVID, and that's the only COVID mention I'll make, post-COVID, I think there will be a rebalancing, but I love this point about hyper-local. I don't think things are gonna change in that there'll be a rejection of digital, but I think people will value local, and I think there will always be that balance of local and local physical and local digital. And it's almost pointless talking about the division between the two these days. We do a lot of work with Coca-Cola in Europe, and they have a model for communication which they call PET, which is not their form of plastic. It stands for purpose, experience, and talkability. And it's their core test for any means of communication. So they ask whether you're doing TV or digital or outdoor or an event, what's the purpose behind that communication? Is it delivering experience, and is it driving talkability? And talkability doesn't always mean positive talkability. It just means, are we being talked about? And the example they give is, look at the Kardashians. They're not necessarily positive role models, but they are infamous. They are talked about. And being a brand these days is very much about being famous, not just being liked. So talkability is very important. And I think those three pillars are extremely important when you're thinking about any form of digital engagement as well. Because a lot of digital we see, you can imagine people are rubbing their hands together saying that's going to win a Cannes Lion, but you can also hear the sigh of millions of consumers as they look at it and ignore it. Our business primarily is experiential, and we now talk as an agency about experiential both sides of the screen. So whenever we devise experiential, we think about what is that person's experience either through the screen or in the physical world, and we try and blend those together. And it doesn't matter if you're a brand that fundamentally exists online, you are realized physically. And it doesn't matter if you're a physical brand that thinks you're immune to digital, you must have a digital footprint and outreach. And again, back to something that Manjari said, I think linking to purchase is easier than ever. And it's the bane of many brands' lives. But every time you have a campaign, I think you've got to ask yourself, how can I link this to an actual purchase? And we've done a lot of work with clients where we've done beautiful both sides of the screen experiential, but the missing link was that we forgot to click the person through to actually making a purchase. Now, it's one thing if you're selling chocolate, but a lot of brands, if you're talking about fashion especially, you've got that opportunity every time you communicate to link to purchase. It may be via Instagram, it may be via a payment system like Paytm or Visa or other local systems. It might be through collaboration. And I think also when we look at designing a lot of digital communication now with clients, we look very strongly into collaboration with other brands, and what leverage can you get for your brand through collaboration? Collaboration with e-tailers, who they're in themselves often are very powerful brands like Amazon. Collaboration with payment systems, because again, combining 1 + 1 can equal 3 in this case, and doing things by yourself is difficult. And you see that through a lot of sponsorship programs. So when you look at sponsors like Coke, when they actually work together with a sponsor like Adidas, often they develop very powerful cooperations. It allows them to get that talkability, drive purpose, drive experience. And then finally, I'd say gaming. And I know Sid is probably better than me on talking about gaming, but gaming is obviously huge. And I think that's something which a lot of our clients are struggling with at the moment. And I wanted to just run through a few cases, which I believe Amrita and Atul will share as links afterwards. But I don't know if anyone saw the event on Fortnite last weekend, which was a live concert of Travis Scott. And they had 12 million live viewers inside Fortnite. And in the follow-up events, they had 27 million views. And every single one of those viewers has an associated ID. And every single one of those viewers afterwards received an email asking them if they would like to buy the Travis Scott Nerf gun. So there was a direct link to purchase, apart from being an incredible experience, which gives you goosebumps because Travis Scott was a virtual giant stamping around the Fortnite landscape. They didn't forget the fact that you want to sell something. So you get the merchandise catalog in your email inbox straight afterwards. And I thought it was a beautiful example of how entertainment could change forever after what we're going through now. Because that is as valid as going to a real concert. I mean, it's amazing. If you haven't seen it, please click on the link later and have a look. A second one is from the fashion world, a case study from a company called Carlings, which is a Scandinavian clothing manufacturer. And they launched a digital collection, which was purely digital. And you would basically buy clothing, which would be tailored and fitted to you purely to post on Instagram or Facebook. You never received the physical clothing. And their platform was, it was connected to purpose, which was about the environment. Experience, in that you download and you wear their digital clothing, and talkability, because you're sharing it on your social network and you are changing your dress virtually. And all the money that they made from that particular collection was linked to WaterAid. So they actually did something powerful socially with the money that made from it. But the talkability around that was phenomenal. And incidentally, they were very late to online retailing. They were way behind their competitors. I'm probably at the end of my 5 minutes. So have a look at a couple of other cases that I'll post later. One of them, which I think gives hope to anybody who's in packaged goods, is a case from Faber-Castell, who make coloring pencils. And they did an amazing augmented reality program and communication in Brazil, where you download an app and you basically point it at a pencil, and the pencil becomes a virtual endangered species, and you can interact and you can design and play with that species. And it was an amazing engagement because it had purpose in terms of ecological awareness, experience, because it became something that jumped up on your phone, and talkability, because pretty much every school in Brazil encouraged children to download this app. They had 600,000 downloads, 5 million engagements off the back of this. And it was beautiful. And that's just a pencil. If a pencil can do it, we all can. That's all for me for the moment.
Thanks, Michael.
Brilliant stuff, yeah. Go ahead, Amrita.
Not very funny, sorry.
Next speaker is Siddharth Kedia. Sid is CEO of Nodwin Gaming and has the mandate to spearhead and drive the online gaming business in India. He's also an avid mountaineer, and when he's not scaling Mount Kilimanjaro, he likes to capture the wildlife through his lens. He's recently adopted a dog and named her Leila, and he's her Instagram manager. Sid, over to you.
Thanks, Amrita. Before I start, I'd like to actually thank Michael, because he's pretty much done my job. He's shared the case study. That's the power of esports. I can just go home. We can call it off. But no.
But you're already home.
That's true. Let me start with a video and give you a glimpse into the world of esports.
Atul.
Am I back?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Atul, Amrita, and Team Candid for curating this. These are difficult and unprecedented times. There is nothing business as usual about it, and hence the webinar couldn't be titled more appropriately. I don't know how many of you know, but Control F5 literally means hard refresh. It means bypass and delete even the cache and start afresh. This couldn't be more true for businesses today and in times to come. Hence, what I'm going to say is not business as usual. And if any of us thinks that life will go back to how we knew it, we need to think again. Coronavirus has just done a global control F5. And now I am more convinced than ever that we are probably living in the matrix. All this while, when marketeers looked at spending their budgets to use, the first distinction was ATL versus BTL. In ATL, traditional media came first and then digital. In digital, it ranged from SEO to banners to social to video, and then came gaming. And then within gaming, last came esports. So let's say esports was 0.1% of a brand spend, if at all. My prediction, that is set to change. COVID has shown, and at an accelerated pace at that, that the youth of this country increasingly want interactive entertainment and not passive. Let me give you some numbers. Just in the last month, gaming in India has grown by almost 50%. Watching of game streams, which is nothing but esports, has gone up by approximately 75%. We run one of the premier properties of Tencent called PUBG Mobile Premier League. We had to postpone that last month because of COVID. However, we ran something called PMPL scrims. So we run tournaments every day for PUBG Mobile, which are live casted on YouTube, and there are awards given, prizes given every day. The daily viewership of PMPL scrims is sitting anywhere between 1.2 to 1.5 million views. That's the new reality. We have done tournaments where we have broken YouTube, where we have reached 2.1 million concurrent views on YouTube. And those are unheard of views. So going forward, when it comes to youth, brands need to think beyond reach, beyond frequency. They have to think engagement. They have to think loyalty. Because this is not even millennials, this is centennials. Authenticity is important. Connect is important. A brand's connect with its audience will have to be about interactivity and community creation, but more importantly, understanding that community. So while social and digital spends will continue to grow, esports will emerge as the medium of choice to interact with the youth of this country. Again, I predict the marketing spends on esports could rise up to 15% in the next 12 to 18 months. And we are already seeing evidence of that. Brands that did not give us a meeting in the last 3 years are now sitting at our door saying they want to give us their money. And I'll give you an example why. our premier product called India Premiership, which is the national championship, starts next week. Considering EPL is not happening, considering Olympics are gone for to next year, if IPL were not to happen this year, we will be the only game in town. We will be the only sporting activity which would be live casted on Hotstar for the next 9 months live. That's esports. Brands will have to, or rather, must include esports as one of the most engaging mediums of interactive entertainment. Market share going forward will be influenced by the size, voice, and volume of a brand's community. And nothing better than esports to engage with the gaming community. So let me give you a scenario. I was at an esports conference a few months back when we were still traveling, and I actually met a few players from Brazil. The problem that Brazil has right now is that the 10 to 12 year olds don't want to see Messi play football or Ronaldo play football. They want to see the FIFA players play the game FIFA. That shook me. Football is in the blood of Brazilians. If the youth of Brazil, and this is, mind you, not America, not Western Europe, Brazil, which is an emerging country like we are, is now saying, I don't want to see mainstream sports, I am predicting the same thing is going to happen in India. So, and I don't want to, had I been on this panel a few months back, I would have told you these are the four ways brands could engage with their community on esports. However, a panelist said in the last session, it's not, marketing is not going to be one fit for all approach anymore. And that's more true for us than anyone else. So everything that we do can be custom made. For every brand, we can custom made a solution. You tell us, what are you looking for? You're looking for an in-stream integration. You're looking for a custom content generation. You're looking for an in-game placement. You're looking for in-stream placement. You tell us, what is it that we are looking for, and esports can deliver that to you. And hence, I don't want to go into the narrative of what are the solutions possible, because for everyone, there would be a custom made solution. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Atul, do you want to start with the questions?
Yes, I will. You know, Michael, you mentioned about one of the most important things is that you've got to be easy to buy. And you and I have worked together, though some years ago, but fared very, very closely. And I completely understand where you're coming from in terms of you've got to be easy to buy, both in terms of mind space and shelf space. My question for you, if you could help us elaborate a little further, is that, and I'm not going to dwell on the COVID space and the lockdown and things like that. Let's just say 1 year from now, when consumers are relatively back to normal, do you see a difference in a fundamental shift in behavior, thereby making consumers harder to get to in terms of, because they spend so much time in the digital space watching e-games instead of going to Premier League games and going to watch football in large Brazilian stadiums? How do you see that kind of transpiring, in your opinion?
I think I caught the back end of the last panel, and Steve said that there was it's amazing how short people's memories are when it comes to crises and disasters, and you know that just from looking at news cycles. I think this is different in that this is going to open people's minds up and eyes up to how things can be done differently. And a lot of people, I think especially if you consider at-risk groups who have to stay locked down beyond when we'll be locked down, I'm talking about seniors who maybe previously didn't buy online, have now realized that it's not as scary and not as difficult, and actually, hey, quite easy, especially when they might always have in the back of their minds, I'm at risk. And they could be at risk for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, vaccine or no vaccine. So I think this acts as a massive sampling exercise for e-commerce. And I think in that way, some people will never go back. John Lewis, which is a big retailer in the UK, which you probably know about, John Lewis has basically said that there's a lot of their stores they won't reopen, and they think it's the end of the high street in some situations. And they came out yesterday, the new CEO, who poor lady took over, I think, in February. So her first job is furloughing lots of staff. She has basically said they're probably going to get into personal financial consumer credits. And that they understand that the world is going to change inexorably. This has accelerated what's inevitable anyway. But I think on one side, it's going to migrate people to e-commerce maybe earlier than they would have gone otherwise. Right. I don't think it means physical shopping is not going to finish. I think they'll just, the question is, where will the balance be? But then I think things that are more radical are like the example I gave of Travis Scott. People are recognizing that entertainment can be AR. Entertainment doesn't have to be watching a real person on stage. And I think the idea for most people of esports and gaming and watching something which is not real seemed like anathema. It's like, that's crazy. But I think this again is helping people understand that you can get a buzz from that. I mean, let's face it, there was a time when we only listened to live music. And people would have said, oh, there's no way I'm going to listen to that without looking at the actual musician. I think we're in that kind of sea change. So yeah, I think it will kind of boomerang a little bit, but it will stay, the boomerang will be slightly ahead of our hands.
Manjari, any thoughts on that? Anything you'd like to add to that process that's going to kind of transpire post?
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more with Michael. It's dramatically going to change how people think about physical versus digital, and also socializing versus being at home. I think there is already a lot of virtual socializing happening from home, and people are just happy doing those virtual parties, etc. That is going to stay for some time. To Michael's point, elderly, definitely. I think e-commerce is definitely going to pick up, because from a lot of consumers that we've spoken to, we know that they want to minimize exchange of hands. And that's the theme. How can I minimize transactions in terms of physical exchange of hands? And whether, therefore the whole delivery system, that that at least these people are guaranteeing that they have sanitized their warehouses, and these people are all wearing gloves, etc. So I trust this source, so that's fine. I'm not just going to go by myself into a random store and buy it. High street is dead, as they said. There was a 700% increase in online shopping on the Taobao website in China post easing of lockdown in China. So e-commerce, there is no doubt, that's a place where there's a lot of trust and credibility. That's definitely going to go up. But a lot of entertainment at home, and how to keep people happy at home, is going to be the new theme for brands, and to all figure it out together. Whether it's entertainment, it's gaming, all of that is going to significantly go up.
Well, the Shanghai Fashion Week was live streamed to some 700 million buyers, I believe, yeah, on Alibaba's mall and Taobao platform. So, and people went berserk buying it, and everything they showed in the Fashion Week was available to buy. So, but do you think, these large scale innovations will work in India in terms of, buying in such a large scale on expensive fashion items, Fashion Week going online, because a panelist before also said that maybe after the lockdown finishes, things might go back to just only certain items being bought online and people preferring to buy the rest offline. So Manjari?
Yeah. So while there is a benefit of seeing, touching things, especially home textiles, fashion, you want to try it on before you buy it. But the scare around catching it from something, from a surface that I'm not aware of. And it's just that whole scare in people's head that, they don't want to touch anything right now. Because there's enough news around, thing being on surfaces and that needs to be clean and stuff like that. it's a bigger, it's a far less risk to take in terms of ordering online. And hey, when the return is available and exchange is available, why not? Why not? Absolutely. I mean, we heard of this news of Louis Vuitton, you know, online sales jumping up. People in China came out doing revenge shopping. But when the secondary infection started to go up, they're all back again to online shopping. So designer brands will sell through online for sure. I don't see luxury going down because there are so many who are just financially unimpacted and they're going to continue to want it. Although where will they wear it is a question that you all have to ask. And where will they carry those bags if it's going to be limited interaction outside of home? But yeah.
Sid, there's a question in for you. How to build scale for virtual experiences? Well, you just said you broke the YouTube. So I think maybe the person wants to know that how did you build the viewership for those virtual experiences?
Well, so it's the community, right? So it's the community of gamers, which is a very, very thick community. And what is happening is, so let's talk numbers. PUBG Mobile. PUBG Mobile has about 500 million downloads. And this is, I'm sure this number has significantly gone up. My information is still a little dated, but has about 500 million downloads, out of which about 140 plus million are sitting in India. When there is such a massive community which is playing the game, there is a very high interest in viewership of that game. So that's one. Second is, how do you build this community? You build this community by giving them an authentic experience. You give them a neutral caster who is going to cast the game, which is equivalent to commentator in any sport. You give them an analyst before the game and post the game, which is going to analyze the game. So everything that happens in traditional sports, the moment you bring it to esport and you give it the same status for yourself, the community starts building. And then there are influencers. So I don't know how many of you are aware, but 3 years back, if you looked at gaming influencers on YouTube, only one or two people had followers more than 1 million. Fast forward to three years later today, there are 40 to 50 gaming influencers that have following of more than 1 million. And mind you, these gaming influencers, more than they are making money through brand endorsements and streamings, they are making money through donations. So you and I are watching their stream. We love watching their stream and we are just donating them money on the stream. That's the connect. And that's
how a bit like TikTok, yeah?
Well, but
that was just a joke. Please, okay. I'm gonna take you up on something you said in the beginning, Sid. And you know, you have thrown the gauntlet to one of the holiest cows of India. Though you did not use the word cricket, you talked about football in Brazil, but you effectively said that cricket in India is under threat. Okay, and that's one of the holiest. The other one's Bollywood. So we won't talk about that because that's also in the space of fantasy similar to online gaming. But talking about cricket, do you really see the impact of online gaming and online behavior of consumers? Because cricket is a huge influencer, and I'm not getting into online gaming versus cricket. That's a discussion for a different platform. I'm talking about how cricket impacts commerce and marketing because of, you know, brand ambassadors that come out of cricket, heroes, and they're followed, advertising on cricket platforms, in stadium, all of that. And online gaming kind of attacking that bastion. You know, you alluded to it. So I'd like to kind of...
So Atul, let me not say a lot because very soon we are going to come up with an announcement for that. However, what I can tell you is that today, the in terms of esports, the biggest game in India is PUBG. Take it from me in writing, 2 years from today, cricket is going to rival those numbers and we are going to make it happen.
Cricket online, you mean?
Esports. Esports version of cricket. Yes.
Interesting. All right. You heard it here first. Okay, Amrita, all yours.
Yeah, I'm just going through all the questions. For others watching, just send in your questions. I'm just quickly going to read some more. Manchi, I think this could be answered by you. How important
before,
will it be?
Sorry, Amrita, before you do, I'm really sorry, Amrita. I just saw a question from a guy called Sanjay Roy, which is related to what Sid was just saying. Sid, it's a small question. What's the core demographic that is hooked on to esports?
18 to 25.
Okay, go ahead, Amita. Sorry.
How important will it be for your marketing partner to capture and manage your data and deliver precision marketing at lower cost? I think there are two or three people who asked the similar thing on reaching true and accurate audiences and the cost factor.
So, extremely important. And, you know, as the channels also, the channel mix is going to change dramatically. And people are going to absolutely spend more on digital activation, digital engagement, integration of campaigns within your shopping website, etc. So more and more around, you know, the ROI, because it is possible to measure it, it's going to be even more stringent versus the previous normal, because the spends were only whatever, 15-20% max of the total cross-channel marketing. It's going to go up significantly now, and people are going to ask for a bang for their buck for sure. And costs will be under pressure for some time. So whatever little companies have to spend on digital marketing, they would want to know the exact numbers and authenticity around the data and the ROI measurement.
Okay, I think that's all the time we have.
I'm gonna do one last question, Amita, sorry, and then we kind of close. You know, I mean, it just struck me that we were talking a lot, and through the three sessions, we've been talking a lot about what's going to change, how consumer behavior is going to change. People are going to go more digital. We talked about it in various contexts of purchase behaviors, gaming, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to remain the same? So very often, you know, especially the world we're living in right now, we're seeing so much changing. But what's fundamentally going to, in your opinion, in each of your opinion, going to fundamentally remain the same with in the context of consumer behavior and user behavior? Siddharth, we can start with you and then go on to Michael.
Yeah, so, you know, Atul, in my mind, from a consumer standpoint, whether we live in a pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID world, I think what will remain the same is a need to connect with the brand, a need to connect with the messaging, a need to connect with the communication. The need to connect will remain the same, and authenticity is going to drive that need. That does not change at all, ever.
Michael?
Yeah, Sid stole my word there.
That's it. Why don't you crack a joke for us instead?
You can say what Lars Ulrich said that day yesterday, Michael, the Salesforce live cast. You can say, talk about that.
I think we're all aware that probably consumers were always very bullshit sensitive. It's just that we fooled ourselves that they weren't. And I think both politically, commercially, I think it's clear now that people aren't maybe as stupid as we thought they were, and that they're also, people are fickle. Their heads are easily turned, and authenticity is important, but authenticity doesn't mean undying loyalty. So I think a brand has got to stay loud, stay true. They'll be caught out if they lie. Just as politicians are often caught out as they lie increasingly, which is great. Maybe to no end, but at least they have their moment of embarrassment as they get caught. So I think authenticity without complacency is never going to change. And it doesn't matter whether it's the Black Death period in the 14th century or post-COVID in the 21st century, that will never change.
Manjri? Yeah, you know, I would go back to Maslow's hierarchy, and I think, you know, the love for food, the love for entertainment, and the love for connection is going to stay no matter what. The mediums can change to deliver these things to consumers, but our basic needs, you know, that's why we are humans. Food, entertainment, and connection with people.
That's a lovely positive note to end on. Amrita, go for it, please.
Thanks to the three of you. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for all the people who watched us.
It's been a great afternoon. We learned a lot from all our panelists over the three sessions. Thank you very much, attendees, for being here. And we'll see you guys soon. Thanks a lot, Michael. Thanks a lot, Sid. Thank you very much, Manjari.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Bye. Bye. Bye.